Dr. Patel is associated with the Borlaug Institute at Texas A&M and also works in post-harvest and food science. And while he's not affiliated with the Horticulture Innovation Lab, he's going to kick off the workshop and talk about food and nutritional security in the developing world. So, Dr. Patel.
Good afternoon, or good morning. Again, I appreciate all of you for coming to this session, skipping the lunch, or maybe hopefully taking the lunch later. I would like to thank the Heart Innovation Lab from UC Davis, who is really responsible for this workshop, for sponsoring all the speakers for this session, and also a lot of ideas you are going to hear this afternoon. So the reason I'm showing this slide is just to show you if there are a lot of burning questions at the end of each speaker, you can really also participate in the panel discussion. That's the whole goal of this particular workshop, rather than just one-way presentation. So you can have a lot of dialogue after the session is over at 3:05 p.m. today. So with that, I'm going to just start my talk. I'm going to talk about the nexus of food and nutritional security, sustainability, and hunger, which needs a multidisciplinary approach, and then I'm going to spend at least the last few minutes about what are the educational opportunities and how do we really resolve some of these issues. So this is a presentation from one of the collaborators in my education grant, Dr. Neil Loblock from Purdue University. So I'm going to spend some time on what is going on with the global transitions, what are the challenges and opportunities, and how do we address this food security and nutritional security problem locally by using their own underutilized crops? And how do we approach this through a system-wide approach? Then I'll spend some time on the educational activities. So I think most of you know that historically we are having some transitions. If you look at this, demographically, we are transitioning, nutritionally, we are transitioning, and epidemiologically, we are transitioning. So the Green Revolution, industrialization, and the healthcare is always changing. So this is an example of what is happening in some of these countries. For example, in Japan, the aging population is increasing after 60s, but at the same time, the birth rate of the newborn babies are almost zero. So what they're expecting is at least they want to maintain after 2030 at least 100 million population in Japan. Right now it's about 128 million. So this is a challenge because the birth rate and the survival in the under 15 is really getting challenging in at least about 20 countries in the world. But Japan is one of the major ones. So that is the transition. And I think in America, of course, this topic of the workshop is in developing countries, but also we need to look at least at a small level what's happening in the United States. This is our consumption, not in on a normal scale, but at least in some population of the country on a weekly basis. So what is happening here is that's leading to the nutritional transition. So it's about 43 million children under the age of 5 are overweight, and then more than 10 in the world's adult population is increasing the weight. So that's leading to the obesity, right? So that obesity leads to several diseases, including the obesity leads to cardiovascular diseases, diabetes, and cholesterol problem, and other diseases also. So this is the current situation as we speak in the last, until 2014. We thought earlier it's only the obesity is increasing in the developed world, but actually it's going all around the world, all the continents. It's rampantly increasing. So that's a bigger challenge we need to be facing. So as I mentioned, obesity causes a lot of diseases, but they're a little bit different from the malnutrition, which is really happening in the developing world, but to some extent also in the developed world. So if you look at this, we're not only, we used to say a few years ago that we are facing the double burden. It's not the double burden now, it's triple burden, and I hope it will not be fourth burden. So right now we are facing hunger, hidden hunger, and obesity. So in some of the developing countries, one time we were thinking about only communicable diseases. Now we're also facing the non-communicable diseases because of the malnutrition and obesity, some of the cancer and cardiovascular disease because of our diet. So if you look at the low-income countries, about 43% people are really suffering in malnutrition. So what is hunger? Hunger is basically a physical sensation of our discomfort as opposed to the food insecurity is lack of available financial resources. So when you look at the socioeconomic status around the world, if you look at the people who are really poor, really eating about 5% of fruits and vegetables, and their daily diet is sugar and oil. If you look at the top of that, who are not poor, at least they are getting about 20% of their diet with other source of protein, fish, milk, fruits and vegetables. The fruits and vegetable consumption is higher as the economic condition is increasing. So that leads to, we are depending on all the time on the staple food crops, rice, wheat and maize. That's continuing. Of course, we can increase that yield, but that's not going to solve the nutritional burden or nutritional security problem. So we need to address both nutritional and food security problems. So just depending on the staple three crops is not going to be helping in future. So the hidden hunger paradox is really complex. So it's not affecting only the children. It's also affecting the adults. It's affecting the pregnant women. It's really a complex phenomena. I'm not going to spend a lot of time in details about that, but it's a really paradox in how to solve this problem. So if you really think about the hidden hunger compared to hunger or malnutrition, hidden hunger, you are not getting absorption of some of these vitamins and minerals you are looking from food, such as zinc and iodine and iron, which is a bigger challenge in some of the developing countries. So in most cases, the hidden hunger, you cannot really see the hidden hunger symptoms until it is clinically needed. So sometimes you can really see only once there is a bigger problem. So these are some of the challenges of the hidden hunger in the global level. Again, these are deficiencies which we are almost deficient because of what we eat. So stunting is another problem at the global level. If you look at the major signs of hidden hunger in Asia and Africa, is about 50%. And the age, before 5 years old, a lot of kids in the developing countries suffer with the stunting and wasting. There's another problem with the weight problem. Here we're talking about obesity. Waste problem is they're not getting enough weight for a particular age. So, of course, the global level, the government policies are making, there is the Millennium Development Goals. They try to reduce the hunger by 50%. And they try to reduce the people who are income is about 1.5, almost reducing half. Then they also planned Sustainable Development Goal, which is also targeting no poverty or zero hunger, and also the good health. There are about 17 goals, which I'm not going to spend the time on that, but just to show you what we have done so far is really great achievement until this year. So if you look at this, until 2015, we were reducing people with undernourishment about 770 million from 926. But this year, this is the last week report from FAO, there is a sudden increase in people undernourished. This is in the last 10, 20 years. With all the Millennium Development Goal and Sustainable Development Goal, we're now again back to increasing the malnourished or undernourished people in the global level, which is not a good news. So if you look at this, for example, about in 2016, about 815 million people undernourished, as opposed to 2015, about 777. And that is basically increasing about 38 million more people than the previous year. I hope it will come down in future, but that's the status right now. So what is causing that? There are several factors. One is climate change. Another one is the conflict developing countries. This is one of the example in South Sudan. You can see that back in 2003, this was the situation with the yellow mark, the stress condition. But in 2017, you can see that everything is under emergency or famine condition in South Sudan. This is again a conflict development problems. So with the climate change, again, El Nino has caused a lot of problem. You can see that about 40 million people in South Africa are food insecure. And again, in Haiti, about 50% crop loss, about 9.7 million people in Ethiopia are suffering with food emergency. So this is just a small example. And if you look into the data in the last 2 months in even United States and other parts of the world with the hurricane, you can really see that that's going to really probably increase that number in next year FAO report. So what is happening with the majority of the stunted children under 5 are having major problem in the conflict countries, not in the unaffected countries. So that is an interesting problem we need to be thinking about. Stunting, we can make a lot of policy decisions, but it is challenging. So come back to the food security. So of course it's a complex process, but we need to make sure that when we talk about food security, it has to be at all times have physical and economic access to sufficient, safe, and nutritious food to meet their energy dietary needs. So food security is not just one. It has to be available, it has to be accessible, it has to be stable, and it has to be bioavailable. And I say utilization, it's kind of a, more of a nutritional security. So, of course, in each of those, you can see there are a lot of factors. So this is the current global food security index. In the U.S., it's about 100%. In Burundi, it's the least in the world. The food insecurity is really high in the Burundi. So, of course, you see that different colored graphs, each country plays a different role in food security index. So when you talk about food insecurity, there are several ways we can assess. That is, one is chronic food security insecurity and the transitory. Sometimes chronic is okay because you can make some policy decision. Transitory is very bad for policy decisions. So you can make some plans and suddenly there is a transition. So then there is another food security problem. It's called seasonal food security or food insecurity. It starts in between these two terms, which is challenging because you cannot really make policy decisions because it's a short term. So when we talk about food security, there are ranges. We talk about very low food security where there's no food at all. But when you talk about low food security, food is there, but maybe the quality food or the nutritious food is not available. That's a challenge. So the other challenge is, around the globe, we're finding mostly women are likely food insecure than men. This is, again, the latest data in the last week. It's interesting. If you look at every continent, the women are more prone to the food insecure problem. And interestingly, in most cases, they are the ones who prepare food, but they are more food insecure. I think in some of the developing countries, it is a challenge because they have to provide food for the men first and then feed themselves. So household insecurity, as I said earlier, the challenge also in this country. So if you look at the United States, we are having about 12.7% population is food insecure. And then there is a category about, with low food security is about 7% and very low food insecurity is about 5%. So I'll switch back to nutritional security, because we always get confused and sometimes we think that when we provide food security at the global level, we're done. That's not true, actually. So if you look at this, nutritional security is you have to provide a nutritious diet, you have to make sure that the essential nutrients are provided, water is provided, sanitary conditions are provided, health services provided, and healthy active life. So I used to think 10 years ago when I talk about nutritional security, I thought it is smaller than the food security. Actually, it is the nutritional security. If you look at this triangle, nutritional security is bigger and the dotted lines are food security. So the nutritional security is coming from the health status or the food intake. And also you can see there are four other factors plays a role on food intake, food access, caring, and health service. So nutritional security is more challenging to solve than the food security, just in general. So it's a really challenging problem. So this is the best example. There was a study done. If you really provide enough calories to the people, these are athletes and some of them are really active people who have provided good calories. But if you look at these red numbers, they are a deficit in some of these elements, even though they are provided with enough calories and food. So if you look at this here, again, vitamins and minerals and calories, when you have the calories, they are enough, but there is a deficiency of some of these elements. So that's really basically what this shows is nutrition security is more important than food security. So there are several factors in malnutrition. You can see that it's again, just like nutrition, you can see the inadequacy of the dietary intake and the disease leads to malnutrition, and there are underlying causes. And the basic causes are basically a lot of political policy-making decisions and also the inadequate education in the population we're dealing with. So at the even early age, if we don't take care of the food security and nutritional security, this color is basically the agriculture and how it plays a food security role here, and this is part of the nutritional security here. So all of them feed to the children to get a better development. So if you do all of that, both food and nutritional security, you can get a reduced morbidity and good motor skills and social performance and adult stature, and we can reduce the obesity. So you need both hand in hand to really develop the kids so that they can be healthy and leading good life. So what are the factors responsible? Definitely all of you know these factors, which is kind of a no-brainer. Increasing population, changing diets, global water crisis, and again, reduced arable land, climate change, and livestock and plant diseases, which you are going to hear a lot of those things from the speakers. But this is an interesting part. We are predicting this population increase. If you look at the population increase prediction in 2011, they predicted about 9 billion by 2050. In 2013, it's about 9.6 billion. In 2015, they predicted 9.7. In 2017, they're predicting 9.8. So the population increase is just shifting. So the predictions may be correct, but that's going to be more than what we are expecting. So this is another example of the war threat. So if you look at the Lebanon, you can see that the food, severely food insecure is about almost 25% because of the war conflict. So how do we achieve the better food and nutritional security? Of course, there are several factors which I'm not going to spend time here. I'm focusing on the changing the diet. So biofortification is one of them. I think there are historically there are good example of sweet potato and rice with the zinc. Biofortification, rice, wheat with the zinc in some of the developing countries. Those are good examples of in helping the food and nutritional security. And breeding plays a bigger role. I think I can give an example. If you really use the different genotype and try to develop some of the varieties suitable for that local area and then increase the nutrient contents, that's the way to go for future for nutritional security problem. So this is an example. In fact, I see Dr. Phil Simons here in Texas A&M. We developed that maroon carrot, and Dr. Simons also developed some of the carrots. So those are best examples to provide to the developing countries like Africa, wherein we have this about 40% more beta carotene than the orange carrot. So that's another way to solve this problem. So, for example, here, also we have to sometimes market it in a better way so that people won't think that it's a dirt. It's a carrot with a lot of nutrients in it. So this is an example. We did some clinical trials to show that when the people eat or drink juice, you can reduce the risk of reoccurrence of the breast cancer by drinking carrot juice. So I'm going to move on to the sustainable agriculture. So there is an evolution. You can see that from 1840 to in about 140 years, we are in the sustainable development, right? We were in industrialized thing and green revolution and sustainable development. And it is a complex phenomena, just like food security. Sustainability is a factor of environmental, social, and economic factors. And then there's an interrelation of some of these factors. So if you look at the farm size from almost 1860 to 2013, the number of size of the farm is increasing, but the number of farms are decreasing. And also, if you look at the water storage decline is rampant in every parts of the world. You can see that. And if you look at this, sustainable intensification means use of land in order to increase the food supply while protecting the biodiversity and ecosystem. So if you look at the next figure, it's a similar situation. If you, from even the latest figure, 2009 to 2016, you can see there is the farm size is increasing, but the number of farms in the global level is decreasing. So the sustainable challenge is rising food demand. We are still depending on the rice. You can see that is increasing, of course, but the area of the land is decreasing. So how do we secure people with food and nutrition is a challenge. So, and again, the meat consumption in even developing countries, like this is on the left side, China is an example. In Thailand, you can see that they're increasing more of meat consumption, not the fruits and vegetables. One of the solutions for the food security and nutrition security is how do we avoid the waste? So this is an example. If we avoid food wastage, if we develop some good optimized value chain processing, of course, not just throwing the fruit, or even if you eat certain part of the fruit, the waste of that you can do the bioprocess and develop some of these bioactive compounds or optimized ways of food supply chain. If you can do that, basically we're almost wasting about 1.6 billion tons of food every day. And about 604 calories per person per day. So one third of the calories we're wasting by just food wastage. So if we can recover some of that food loss, sometimes we don't have to increase we have to increase the production, of course, but this is one of the ways to solve the food security problem. So the other way is integrated farming system, wherein you can also use agriculture, precision agriculture, along with some of the software and some of the new technology. So this is an example when in Niger, back in 1975, this land was drought affected. In 35 years, with the good practices, they were able to get this land back. There are about 30,000 hectares were drought affected at that time. So because of the good sustainable practices, they were able to recover this land in Niger. So what is the system-wide approach? Of course, we always do the crop improvement. And of course, 20 years ago, the breeders were just in their silos and the post-harvest scientists were in the silos. In the last 20 years, that's a good thing happening in this country at least, and some of the other countries, with the system-wide approach. The breeders are talking to the post-harvest and the nutrition and medical scientists. That's the good thing. So we need to really use that and continue that system-wide approach so that you can develop a good food and nutrition security problems to be solved. The one example is higher economic return by system approach and improve nutrition and marketability. The farmers, even in the developing countries, can get good price for their whatever the produce they grow. This is the way we are approaching in Texas A&M. One of the examples is melons. We try to use for most of the crops. Again, I'm not going to spend time. And basically, the breeders are involved, post-harvest scientists, and the health experts, the consumer expert, the sensory evaluation, then the extension people are involved in system-wide approach. So because we are doing that team, we just received about $4.5 million grant on just developing melons on the USDA CRI caps. Again, this includes about 7 states in the United States who are dealing with the melons using the table to the farm. I mean consumer to the farm instead of the consumer farm to the table. So I'm going to spend time in, okay, what is the best approach to solve this problem? One is locally. There is a diverse germplasm, which I don't have to talk to the choir, and we have to use the sustainable diet. I'm not going to spend a lot of time here. It has to be culturally acceptable, accessible, economically fair, and nutritionally adequate. So this is the best way to solve. So normally we do this in terms of the water use. If breeders can develop a crop which can grow in throughout the season, of course it's not going to be easy. You can really use that water efficiently for the particular local areas. So these are some of the potential crop. One is the amaranthus in Uganda and quinoa in Peru and Ethiopia, teff. There are a lot of underutilized crops, which I'm not going to spend a lot of time, but these are root crops. There are underutilized vegetables, which are not tapped into, underutilized fruits, cereals, and legumes, and condiments. So this is another example of the butter. You can use it locally, and it also created some good empowerment to the women in that area. So I'm going to spend about 3 minutes on what are the educational opportunities in this area, and this nexus of these 4 areas. So we received a challenge grant, again, on this exact same problem. We are working on it. In fact, there are some of the speakers here from Texas A&M are here. This is the curriculum development. We developed the course on the nexus of food security, nutritional security. And these are the speakers. As we speak, the course is going on at Texas A&M. This is the course outline, which I'm not going to spend time in this, but you can see that all the topics what I mentioned are addressing in this course by different experts in the nation. And this is as we speak. There are students in Texas A&M, Ohio State, Purdue, and Texas A&M Kingsville. It's led by the Texas A&M University. We also did, before this, we did a course on phytochemicals in fruits and vegetables and improve health. Again, there are about speakers from around the country. We also did a science of foods for health. So, again, there also we had students in Purdue, Michigan, College Station, Columbus, Ohio, in every parts of the nation. So we had an experiential learning for the students from Texas A&M. And these are students from Texas A&M who went to Ohio State. From Ohio State, students came to Texas A&M. And this is another way of education of people. There are a lot of underutilized crops, like amaranth is one. There was a demo in Chicago in 2013 about the value of this crop, which sometimes we don't even pay attention to that, even in the United States. So we need to educate people. We also have a program in our center. We educate the kids about the value of fruits and vegetables, and particularly a lot of kids are excited about this maroon carrot or the purple carrot. So again, this is our center, which is focused on different aspects of multidisciplinary way to address some of these problems. So with that, I'm going to conclude. I don't think I have time, right? Okay, I have 2 minutes. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to. As I mentioned, there will be a lot of discussion in the panel at the end. The question is on the nutrients, which nutrient is we need to be highly focusing. That's a very good question. I think as we speak now, the beta-carotene in some of these countries is really critical, at least in some of the developing countries. But there are other, like some of the elements like zinc, some of these countries are really lacking, and it has a bigger impact after the age. Yes? I'm sorry? Okay, those are basically, Yeah, the question is, how do we decide on which crops are good for which country for the use of the underutilized crops? So the examples I showed is some of those are mainly from India, but there are other developing countries have the similar exciting tropical fruit crops. So there are, the nutrition value of those are kind of explored, but not to the maximum extent. So we need to be showcasing those nutritional value of those fruit crops or vegetable crops or other crops to the local people so that they can eat. What is happening in the developing countries, they are growing it, but they're selling it in most cases. Yes.
Do you think that the food diversity increased with the increase in the size of the farm?
Yes. In my opinion, yes, it is happening that way. Yes. Sorry. Yeah.